I'm Jane Johnson, and you are listening to the Careering into Motherhood podcast. My guest today is Emma Kangas. Emma is an executive and leadership coach who works with men and women to help them own their role, as she says. All too often, we find ourselves in a job or a role that maybe feels too big for us, or we somehow unwittingly get ourselves into situations that we don't really remember getting there. It can feel unnerving and out of control, and Emma helps clients to work through that. She's a specialist in emotional intelligence and using EI to improve relationships. In this episode today, Emma shares her five top pieces of career guidance advice. Emma, I am really pleased to have you on the podcast today. Thank you very much for making the time. I've always actually wanted to kind of unpick a bit about your career path. I remember when we first met, you talked about you'd had what seemed like a very glamorous pre-career in music and film production agencies.
Yeah, it's been quite varied industry-wise. So I started within TV production. I was buying television programmes to put on air, also responsible for where those programmes and where the adverts sat. And then I moved into more entertainment industry and worked for the company that owns the O2. So when I first started, there were 12 of us that worked there. It was very small. They just bought Millennium Dome, so it was mud at the time. And then the teams grew and grew, and the O2 was built. So I was responsible for business development, project management, partnership management. I spent quite a long time there and then became a consultant freelancer, worked within various music industry businesses, and then thrown in a couple of maternity leaves, went to Universal Music, where I was doing business development for a new festival division. They'd never done festivals before. So all within very similar industries, very creative, although I'm not massively creative myself, but that's where my business development skills came through rather than more of the production creative side. In terms of roles, really varied. I've been an employee, I've been a freelancer, a consultant, worked part-time, worked full-time. So it's been quite varied over the last 25 years-ish.
Do you think that that huge variation and different roles as well within very varied organisations is really what's equipped you to now? Your clients are obviously, as a coach, coming from all different industries and bringing all different challenges.
You know, in the sort of coaching world, there's a certain amount of encouragement to find your niche. That can either be in terms of your coaching niche or industry niche. I've actually found with me that I don't have an industry niche because I work across whether or not it's financial services, creative industries, charity sector, banking. There's a whole variety of different industries that I work within. And I think my previous work experience has really helped that, because when I was particularly with partnership management, I was working with so many different brands, and one minute it was Credit Suisse, the next minute it was Coke, Nestle, Cadbury, a whole variety. So that's definitely helped me have a very broad understanding of different businesses, because I was working with so many individuals within those businesses. It's given me an understanding of the different sort of types of people that work within industries, because in some industries, they might be more creative, for example, or within financial services, they might have a different outlook. I've been very much exposed to many different personalities, different people, but also different industries as well.
Fascinating. So bringing all of that together this morning for our conversation, we're going to talk about your top five, I don't want to say pieces of career advice. I always say that. And then I always have a conversation about how I don't think, you know, life should be about one person conveying advice upon another. It's more your tips or things that you either use with clients to guide them, or that you use yourself, that people have perhaps conferred upon you and you use as guidance in no particular order.
Yes, no particular order. From my experience and experiences with my clients, a career trajectory doesn't have to be upwards. It can be sidewards. It can actually be moving down in order to at some point move up. Definitely from stepping out of being a full-time employee to being a consultant, it's a very different role. The work can be quite similar, but it's a very different mindset. I never once thought of it as necessarily a step up or a step down. I guess more in my mind, it was a sidestep. That sidestep gave me at the time so much more than what my role was giving me. And whether that was financial gain, whether or not it was time, flexibility, and more interesting roles, because I was choosing the roles that I wanted to do and different work. A lot of people tend to think that they always have to be moving upwards, but it isn't always the case. And I have had clients that I've been working with who've actually decided to, they may have moved companies and taken a role which just happens to be more junior, knowing that the experience that they need to gain in order to take the next step up at some point, they will find in this new role. So I find that when people start thinking of it not sort of as a ladder, they become far more compassionate with themselves, because actually sometimes people consider that step up as an effort. And if you keep climbing, you know, even the word climb kind of makes you feel slightly out of breath. Not many people think to sidestep, whereas you could be in a department, say you're working in marketing and you love marketing, but actually you decide that that is maybe not for you and you wanted to go and work in HR. You know, you could consider a sidestep within that department in order to learn more about that department. So it doesn't always have to be a continual step up all the time to find the individual success that you're looking for.
It's a really interesting concept, actually, and specifically for our audience, where we are obviously talking to a lot of mums and parents, where it is perceived that when you leave that world of work and take a break, whether it's just on maternity leave or taking a longer break than that, that is seen as almost failure in some people's eyes, that you haven't achieved that career that maybe they thought you wanted or you thought you wanted. And yet, if you look at it through the lens you've just described, you're actually doing something, raising another life or lives, is so incredibly awesome. But looking at it as, oh my God, I've just got to keep on this trajectory. I mean, frankly, let's be honest, we're talking about earning more and more money. Yet there's so much going on in the world right now that indicates that is not a true measure of success. So I totally understand what you're saying about this idea of starting to view things less as a linear progression, and then automatically along with that comes this idea of greater compassion for yourself.
Absolutely. Remember, after having my daughter, who's my firstborn, I really reassessed what I wanted from work and what would really benefit me. And I actually decided to do a 4-day week because that's what I needed at the time. Now, I was nervous about having that conversation with my boss, that if I could do a 4-day week. And it was a conversation that ended up being quite surprising for me, because I thought that there might be an issue with me doing a 4-day week. I was thinking maybe I'd have to change jobs, maybe my job wouldn't fit into 4 days. And I sort of knew that essentially they would probably get 5 days out of me, looking at the number of hours that I ended up working. But to my surprise, when I had the conversation, it was agreed that if I could make it work, I could stay within my role. I may have even stayed with the same salary, or there was a very good compromise. And it was just the fact that I was just willing and very open to have that conversation. Now, I could have thought, oh, I can't possibly ask to do those 4 days. It's never going to work. I'm just going to have to leave. But, you know, again, I do a lot of work around challenging conversations and working with those women that may have taken a break and they've lost a little bit of confidence, as we do often when we're on maternity leave or we've had an extended break. And so they don't necessarily know exactly what to say. How do they go about asking for part-time work or just some form of flexibility so that they can keep their role? They may enjoy it. It may work well for them in a number of different ways. So it's just really thinking about how can I have that conversation. I always say to people that I'm working with, start with the perfect scenario. What is it you would absolutely love? Even if you think, oh, you know, I might be taking the mickey a bit here, but what would really work for me? And then work back from it, because you can always negotiate from that point. If you go in at, oh, well, I'm thinking of this and what do you think? And you know, it's not really working for you. there's no room for that negotiation. Whereas if you start with what ideally you'd like, and then you come to a compromise, but it's so worth having that conversation because you just don't know what's going to come of it. And it doesn't mean to say that you've got to leave your job or you've got to go and find another job which might be more junior because you're working less hours. There's so many different possibilities. It's about really thinking, what is it you want and how do you have that conversation with the relevant person at work?
So let's come on to number two, please.
So I would say it is absolutely okay to have more than one identity. There is a lot of chat about being our authentic selves, which absolutely, the more authentic we are, normally the happier we are. Things come quite easily when we're being authentic. We're using our strengths that we know how to use, etc. But there's also a lot of chat about how you should be able to be your true self at work. And I think there is an element of benefit within that. However, I think that particularly when we are mothers, we may need to have different identities. We may need to go into our work identity when we are at work. It doesn't mean to say you're not being your authentic self. You're just acquiring a different identity. It's still you, but it's the fact that we are able to get into a different mindset. I work with so many women and men who enjoy being in that different mindset. It takes them away from the home, however happy the home may be, however wonderful it is spending time with children. We don't always want to be in that same mindset when we step into our working environment. And especially with so many people working from home now, it's even more difficult to step into the work identity, because I used to always say to people, at what point do you become your work self? And people would say to me, well, when I step on the train going into work, or when I step on the tube. It's the travel, the journey into work where they stepped into their work self. I had some women say to me, it's the moment I just change into my work clothes, put on a blouse, or I put heels on. But obviously, with working from home, you know, we have our slippers on as opposed to our work shoes. Our journey to work is from the kitchen after making a cup of tea to our office or our bedroom, wherever we're working. So I believe, and the people that I'm working with, it's actually essential to have more than one identity. And there is nothing wrong with it. The challenge comes when we believe I have to be this one person. I have to be my utter true self. I don't believe you should. I don't believe it's necessary. If you want to be, absolutely. If your work lends itself to you going in and being the person you were an hour ago at home, then fine. But I don't think anybody should battle with this idea of, if I move into my work identity, I'm not going to be my authentic self. Yes, you will be. You're just acquiring a different side to you. And I think that is absolutely fine. And at times, I think it's necessary.
It's really interesting, isn't it? Maybe draw the line at if your colleague leaves toys all over their desk, starts hiding them away or yelling at them to put them away.
Yeah.
But it's really interesting. And when I used to work in the city, it was absolutely that thing of putting on that uniform, those city clothes. And when I stopped that kind of lifestyle, I got rid of them all. And there was a kind of freedom that I found in being able to wear what I wanted to wear for work and do what I wanted to do work when I wanted to work, of course, all those things. But equally, there was something that was missing, not from my life, but from who I was professionally. And so I totally understand what you're saying. Those lines are much harder. As mums or the women that we talk to on the podcast, we're often working for ourselves and doing our own thing. I've heard of some people who almost have rituals before they go to work, in inverted commas, in order to help them feel in that professional headspace. I don't know, do you do anything like that? Put on makeup, perfume? I don't know.
I think for me, I actually find it quite difficult working in, say, jogging bottoms. Even if I move into jeans, I feel slightly more...
For our listeners who can't see you, I should say, Emma is very glamorous, always perfectly coiffed. So yeah, I can imagine you're not sitting there in jogging bottoms.
Just a mental thing where I do a lot of my sessions over Zoom with camera on. So I will put a bit of makeup on and brush my hair, but I'm Most definitely, I do think about, well, what am I going to be comfortable in? One thing for me is I will always have a cup of tea. First thing, my first session of the morning, people will always see me with a cup of tea. And it's sort of my, okay, right now I'm in my workspace. I do have certain things that help me get into that space, definitely.
What would you say to someone who is listening to this and they are currently working for an organisation where they feel their values are so compromised by the person that their employer is expecting them to be, that they're utterly miserable? Because I, for one, have definitely been there in that place. That's really hard, because I start to think, oh God, this is me. I'm not being the person they wanted to be. And then I try and morph into that person that they seem to want employees to be. And it just becomes even more unpleasant and unbearable.
There would be people that may say, oh, well, have a think, you know, if there's another job you might want to do or another industry you might want to go in. But that's all very well said and done. But actually, we might be enjoying part of our work. We may not be able to have the option of just leaving. And so, you know, quite often I will work with clients on really looking at self-awareness, which is actually one of the other points, one of
my five. Okay, let's seamlessly come on to that.
Yeah, but start with self-awareness and really think about, well, what is it that isn't aligning? Know what your values are. And then think about, is it that my values aren't aligned with the person I'm working with? Is it that they're not aligned with the business values? Really explore what that is. Then you can often move on to your awareness of others. It's so important to work on being self-aware first, then look at self-awareness of others. And sometimes when we're aware of others, and so if you did have the nightmare boss, so your values weren't aligned, you weren't getting on, you're going into work thinking that you're trying to be your authentic self, no matter what identity that you're using, but it's just clashing, it's not working, then really explore kind of the other person. Think about maybe a leadership style that your boss has, and maybe that's what's conflicting with you. Maybe they have a different lifestyle to you. It's just really worth putting yourself in their shoes. And it's not something we do very often, where empathy comes out. I do a lot of work around emotion intelligence, and empathy is such a big part of emotion intelligence. And it's just helpful sometimes to work through those things first to try and establish, is there anything that you can be doing? And then not to say that you should blame yourself in any way. Sometimes we just have these relationships at work that just don't work, and we really need to figure out, how do we best manage them? And one of the best ways to manage a relationship, if changing career or leaving the business isn't an option, how do you actually work with these people? How do you manage them? Is to use empathy and to really understand, where are they coming from? Is there a reason why they're being how they're being? And then the next step on is, okay, knowing all of this information, is there anything I can do to help the situation? So I think as long as you start with self-awareness, the awareness of others, using empathy, and then what is it that you can do in order to help manage those relationships and manage the difference in values and misalignment, that's a really good place to start before you make any further decision.
Yes, definitely. Moving on, number four.
Okay, so we hear a lot about imposter and how it shows up. And particularly I find with clients that may have had a career break, their imposter is showing up a lot. Imposter always affects our confidence and therefore affects the impact that we can make at work. We are often advised to kick the imposter out the door, put it under the carpet. We don't need to listen to that. We can just think, no, don't be so silly. I'll brush that off. I take a really different approach to imposter. I always suggest to friends, to family, to clients, that they befriend it. Because actually, if we befriend our imposter, there's some really helpful nuggets of information there that we can use. And so if you think of it as a tennis ball, for example, and if you think of a tennis ball's hollow inside, if, say, your imposter came at you like a tennis ball, and negative chatter. I can't do this. I can't do that. I'm going to fail at that. That's not going to work for me. You know, we're in that kind of fixed mindset. If you were to open up a tennis ball and imagine there being all this information, all the negative chatter inside, and you've kind of released it out, and listening to each piece of advice. So if something is telling you you can't do something, okay, well, why? Why can't I do that? What truth is in that? Is there any truth whatsoever? Because a lot of our imposter is just chatter that we can't support with any real truth. So is there any truth in it? Is there anything that I could be doing in order to not feel this way? It might be a course that you might need to do. It might be a leadership course, for example, at work, that you think, actually, that's going to really boost my confidence. That's going to make me feel like I can do something and I can move into a growth mindset. So that's helpful information for me. I'm going to go and investigate what my company has to offer me in terms of either coaching support or training support, workshops, etc. So there's that element. And then there's always going to be the stuff that actually doesn't serve anybody and it might not be helpful. So if you think about, okay, well, I'm going to leave all that stuff in the ball. I'm going to leave that. I'm going to take what I need, take all the helpful information, take the advice a friend would give me, and then you leave everything back in the ball and almost fit the ball together again and you just throw the ball away. So that's kind of taking everything that doesn't serve you, but all the great helpful bits of information from that negative chatter. You'll probably be quite grateful for that information, just as you are grateful when a friend may give you some feedback that you really appreciate. So I would suggest that you befriend that imposter and you use it as a friend rather than something that you just want to throw away and ignore.
Or worse, that you can't get rid of it, that it's just there and you just try and ignore it and it still keeps coming back. Because there is some school of thought, isn't there, that to a degree, having this imposter voice is there to keep you safe, to stop you doing silly things. But then, of course, it's when it gets out of control and actually stops you being who you really need to be or want to be.
The more you talk about something, because as we know, imposter thought can linger. It can stay with us. And unless we actually explore it and figure out what is it telling us, it will linger. Quite often we find ourselves in a situation where we've got a problem and we phone a friend and we talk to that friend and we feel so much better by the end of it because you get a different viewpoint. If you explore your imposter as a friend and think about what do I need to focus on and what do I need to brainstorm in order for me to see what that thought is a little bit clearer, and in best case scenario, for that thought to eventually go away.
And can I ask, in terms of just practicalities, say you're starting this new job and your voice in your head is telling you, yeah, you're not as good, they shouldn't have picked you, I'm sure they have better candidates, etc. How do you actually unpick that? You talked about, imagine it was a friend who was bringing these ideas to you and you'd support them. Do you journal this stuff? Do you write it down?
So I think any way that's really best for you. Journaling works well with some people. Other people actually have a blank as soon as they look at the page. I always say to people, just free write. Any word that enters your head, just write. But again, for some people, that comes easily. For others, it doesn't. For others, they just might, you know, they may not enjoy writing or typing. They may want to record it. So, you know, sometimes I will use the dictate button on my laptop, yeah, and either within a Word document or an email, draft an email, and I will just talk or I'll record it on my phone. So I think it's choosing whichever way works best for you. I think that in terms of kind of unpicking, it's really about getting something out there, either verbally or written, and to persevere with that, because it might be that the light bulb moment or thought doesn't come immediately. It's over time where you might think, I keep writing the same thing every single day, but then I can promise you that that will evolve and you might end up writing more about one thing than another thing. The more we realize our strengths, the more we can lean upon those, so that when we get the negative chatter, oh, they're not going to give the job to me, or I'm not good enough for the job, have a think about the strengths that you bring to that job. And sometimes the strengths that are unique to you, I work with clients asking them, what is the compliment or acknowledgement that you hear most often? Does that align with what you think your unique strength is? Work with that, because it is unique to you. You know, you might be an amazing people person. You might give off this energy that people just thrive on. Use that in your interview. So it's just really knowing what you can bring, what value can you bring to something, and really play to your strengths. But you have to know what they are. So it's worth spending some time on what you think your strengths are, and definitely ask other people, because sometimes we can be a bit embarrassed about, oh, I'm so good at this and I'm so good at that. Ask other people and make a note of them, because that immediately will bolster your growth mindset.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. So coming on to your final piece of wisdom.
Yes. Final piece of wisdom, I would strongly suggest finding a mentor, either someone within your organisation, or it can be someone external. And it doesn't have to be somebody that's doing the same job as you. It depends on your reasons for having a mentor. So there are some people that I work with who will look for a mentor because they want to be inspired in terms of their role. They want to look at various opportunities. So they might actually decide to have a mentor that does something different, maybe in the same industry, maybe in a different industry. First, think about, what is it I need from a mentor? Is it somebody to give me guidance within my industry? If it is, then obviously find someone within your industry. Is it somebody that's going to widen your network? Because that might be the thing that you need to work on. And so you may wish to choose somebody in a different industry. Is it somebody where you really want to learn more about the business you're in and the nuances of that business and how you can progress within that business? Then who internally has influence and also inspires you? Not that I necessarily encourage mirroring someone else, because I think that... Yeah. There are various elements and qualities that we can take from somebody and mirror them, but I don't necessarily believe that everybody should be a mirror of each other within the team. Yeah. Maybe there's an attribute that isn't quite as strong for you. Maybe you would like to have more courage. Maybe you want to be a better communicator. So it can be as specific as that. I need to be able to communicate more. Oh, well, that person in my company is amazing at communication, amazing at presenting a workshop. Having a mentor to brainstorm, to be inspired by, and mentor support their mentees. It's different from coaching.
Yes, it's worth just pointing that out, isn't it? Coaching will usually have a kind of finite end. You'll work with a coach on a specific thing, you'll agree a number of sessions and work through that. A coach will have a program that the coach will take you through. It's not just sitting down having a nice chat every so often. It's quite hard work. You get what you pay for with a coach. Whereas mentoring is more sitting down, having a chat. There isn't necessarily an end in sight.
No, and I would say that mentoring is more advisory. So a coach will make suggestions, can make recommendations, but really a coach is there for you to really come up with these sort of answers yourself. And it's always way more powerful anyway. If we think of something, it's way more powerful. So a lot of mentors, they will share their knowledge, their experience. It can be quite personal. They can involve themselves a lot more. A mentor's amazing for their network. To find somebody with a network either very similar to yours or even a much wider, greater network, that in itself is so, so helpful, because they're always talking to people. And if, say, for example, you're thinking of changing jobs, it's good to have somebody where they might be having a conversation with somebody in a different company and they know that you're looking for a job. So, yes, I would really, really encourage anybody to find a mentor. The other use of a mentor, really, say if you are coming back from a career break, just having somebody that's been through the same and to show you how they've done that. How did they manage balance work, home life? How did they navigate their way through the business being in a different situation to what they may have been in before? So really focus on what is it you need. It isn't always a business objective. It can be a personal objective.
And the other thing is just to go out and ask. I think people often feel... awkward saying to somebody, oh, hi, would you be my mentor? And I think it's be specific. I've spoken about this before in Careering into Motherhood. We've run mentoring programs, but it's approach somebody with a clear reason as to why, what it is you want from that person, and just ask them. The worst they can say is no. But 9 times out of 10, they'll say yes.
It's flattering when somebody asks you to be their mentor.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Very few people say no. They enjoy it. Usually, the only reason why they say no is a time thing. They may just be so swamped that they can't give you the time that you need. But I would say generally, people really like being asked because you're asking for their expertise. It's a privilege.
Brilliant. Emma, we have covered so much in this non-linear career progression to mentoring, to imposter syndrome, self-awareness. Amazing. Thank you very much indeed for your time. Really lovely talking to you. Thanks.
You too. Thank you so much.
My thanks to Emma for joining me today. From non-linear careers, imposter syndrome, self-awareness, and that all-important advice to find yourself a mentor or a champion, someone who can look out for you and support your career goals. We have covered a lot. You can find out more about Emma's work via our website. And of course, there you can also sign up for our newsletter, which is delivered monthly and contains loads of coaching resources and tools to help you. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.